97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, we still have a lot of 9/11 memories to share here before the end of the hour. I do have something fun coming up at 5:30. So I think I've told you about Liz Camlett before. I discovered her a couple of months ago, and Keith Urban put out that Yacht Rock album, which is excellent, by the way. And the song with song with Michael McDonald is the only original on there, and it's really, really good. I noticed that Stephen Bishop's wife, her name is Liz Camlett, was doing these very interesting Instagram feeds. And the one that I first watched was where she kind of broke down how much money Stephen would make from Keith Urban covering On and On, on his new record. And then there's dynamics if they go to, let's say Keith comes here to, you know, Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. He plays that song. The venue has, because of licensing fees, they have to pay Stephen as well. So some of the business side of music is broken down exceptionally well by Liz. So we got in touch with her. I told Fred, I said, reach out to Liz Camlett and just tell her I'm a big fan of what she's doing on Instagram. So she's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. I'm telling you, she is fascinating. She's written a book for people. Like, if you're in the music industry and if you're young in the music industry or you want to go, you need to know the business side of the music industry.
You
it's very important to educate yourself. And I could not think of someone better than Liz right now. And you're going to hear it when you hear that interview at the bottom of the hour. David Strom from HotAir.com is back with us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. Hello, David. How are you? I think we got you on the Zoom, don't we? No, we don't. Let's see if we got him on the Zoom. There it is. There it is.
I see him.
All right. Let me see if I see him. There he is. Hello, David Strom. How are you?
I am doing really well. How's my sound?
I think it sounds okay. You guys are going to have to guide me through this. But let me start with something. We're going to do some 9/11 stuff. But you wrote a column about this, and I haven't touched this yet today. And it's just utterly ridiculous when you hear the reaction here. We found out something fascinating about the holdout juror in the Lindsey Clancy case today. And listen to Gayle King's reaction.
And the other thing that I would just be remiss to not say is,
Hang on, that's the Oprah cut. I don't want that. This one's a little different. I'm sorry about that. I'm having one of those days with the buttons. Here we go.
I'm curious about the jurors themselves because we know it was 9 women, 3 men. What was the age range? What was the racial makeup? I haven't heard any of that. What was it?
70-ish to 22.
Mm-hmm.
And one person of color, and then everybody else was white. A lot of the jurors had children.
Uh-huh. One person of color was a person of color, a woman or a man?
A man.
A man. Is a holdout juror a person of a black man?
Yes.
A black man is a holdout juror?
Yes.
Well, I have to sit with that for just a second.
Can't really make that up, can you? That reaction. Unreal. Just shocked that it wasn't some white dude that was the holdout, right? That blew up the narrative, David Strom, didn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It was just hilarious to see that because, of course, Gayle King thinks that black people care more about, minorities as victims. She's a woman, therefore she should get off. But, of course, the truth is that for a lot of black people, their reaction to crime is actually, much harsher than it is for your typical wealthy woman out there who just sort of divides the world up into, the victims who fit in, they're women, minorities, trans people. Whereas if you live in a world where crime actually happens and you don't happen to be a criminal, you want criminals to be punished.
Yeah, you would think so. But, whoa, that's kind of interesting. And there's interesting reaction to that today on the social medias, isn't there? And, it's kind of interesting that Gayle, you heard it in Gayle's voice. I'm rather shocked that she was the first one to kind of ask that question to those jurors because, to her point, no one really knew that.
Well, you know, it's amazing that the assumption was it was a man and it was a white man, because white men in this, you know, sort of DEI mindset are the oppressor. And of course, the way in which, you know, the left has interpreted this is, you know, Lindsey Clancy is the victim, not the perpetrator. You know, they see a woman in a wheelchair and they think, oh, we have to take care of her. They're not. And, you know, the black man, the holdout juror, said, hey, wait a second. She killed three kids. You know, she's not the victim. She's the perpetrator.
Yeah. One of the jurors said that he couldn't get past the fact that she strangled her three children. Well, I think that's kind of a normal reaction. I think getting past the fact that three young children were strangled methodically, and again, I've been one that's expressed some empathy for the mental health aspects of this, but my goodness, it was almost like that was an afterthought for some of these jurors.
Well, and you hit on something right there. I think we can, you know, both look at Lindsey Clancy and say she clearly needed help. She was in, you know, deep mental distress.
Right.
You know, and that's a real factor. And recognize she's a vicious murderer. Those two things can go together. I mean, I know plenty of people who've been in the depths of mental health crises. And you could walk into a hospital at any time and say, I think I'm a danger to myself or others, and you will get treatment. And they won't just hand you pills. You know, it's not like we're in 1968 and it's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You know, there's real help out there for people. And she had certainly talked to people who could get her that help. And she decided instead to plot a murder and execute it.
Well, she was worried, justifiably so, that because of her mental condition, her children were going to be taken away from her, right? That was one of the concerns. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the civil trial, because I would make a strong case that some of the earlier testimony in the trial, you know, there were a lot of people, and you've heard this from Kevin Reddington, that he preys on Lindsey Clancy as a mother, as a person. Well, that narrative is going to have to hold for the, you know, the civil trials. And I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm just trying to state the facts here, because you can't have a drug company that's going to be held liable if the mother is actually liable. So it's going to be interesting. This is not over yet. I'll be very curious to see if they cut a deal or if something else happens here with this case in the future. But let's talk about 9/11, because you even pointed this out in your column today. And I missed this. I'll be honest with you, David Strom, that if you look at the New York Times today, here's a couple of headlines from 9/11, one of the worst days in our nation's history. Facing Islamophobia, Mamdani keeps focus on 9/11 victims. Here's another one. After 9/11, Islamophobia shaped a generation of Muslim New Yorkers. The Muslims are the victims here. That should have been clear for the last 25 years, right?
Yeah, I've written two columns about that. This, in fact, I think three columns this week, because there is this steady stream of stories out there that are focusing on Muslims who claim that they are the subject of great hate because of 9/11. And first of all, we know that's not true, because since 9/11, there are more Muslims today in New York City who came there or were born there after 9/11 than before 9/11. You know, if New York City or America were a hellhole for Muslims, they wouldn't be all rushing to come here. And second of all, it's all about taking the focus away from the people who were victimized, and again, identifying a victim group out there who are not being victimized, who just fit into the DEI categories of the media. I call them the Pravda media and the left-wing establishment.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with October 7th. I mean, already by October 8th, you had two phenomena all at once. You had all these Muslims and in particular Palestinians celebrating what happened. You know, the murder and rape and everything that took place in Israel. And you had protests out there calling Israel, you know, a perpetrator of genocide well before the war happened or anything else. You know, the perpetrators became the victims. And, you know, ever since in the media, when they talk about the victims in the Gaza war, most of whom are, you know, Hamas fighters, probably two out of every three, they're treated as victims. And most of them had been involved in October 7th or other terrorist attacks.
Well, let's go further than that. And you, I know you included this. You embedded this in one of your columns from earlier on hotair.com. But and this is something that doesn't get repeated very often. I don't even know if I saw it anywhere else this week. But there were Palestinians dancing in the streets, kids, moms, dads, celebrating the fact that the Twin Towers fell during that time period. So you can call it Islamophobia, or you can call it Muslims cheering on death of America, which still happens, by the way, within our own boundaries in Dearborn, Michigan, and other places right now. I'm sure certainly in New York City.
In New York City, Zohran Mamdani has many times gone and spoken at mosques where they explicitly talk about killing and murdering and eliminating Western society. You know, it's preached in mosques across the United States that it is the mission of Muslims in the United States to destroy Western society and replace it with Sharia law. I mean, that's not something, you know, that anyone has made up. You know, it happens every Friday, every Saturday, in mosques where they tell people it is your duty to become a martyr and to, you know, kill the infidel.
Yeah. And these are even through the lens that we have this week with remembering 9/11, I don't think there's been nearly enough emphasis on that in, you know, some of the legacy media coverage, because it's still real and we're still at war with radical Islam. And I think we're very lucky that we haven't had anything, you know, of this level happen in this country since then. I think that surprises a lot of people, right?
Yeah, well, I have the perfect example of how absurd this is. The Economist magazine, which presents itself as a very centrist, very fact-centered magazine, actually wrote a piece about how we shouldn't worry about Islam. We should worry about Islamism. And then they go on to explain that 40 to 45% of Muslims believe that violence is acceptable to impose Islam and Sharia law. And it's like, well, if almost half the people who are Muslims also believe that, you know, terrorism is okay, I think you should be afraid of Islam. I mean, you know, are there Muslims who present no danger, who don't approve of this? Of course there are. But would you let mass immigration from a population, half of whom believe that violence is justified against you? You'd be an idiot to do so. And we're idiots because we're doing so.
It's insanity. It really is. And it's not even talked about enough, because even if you bring it up, you're Islamophobic, right?
Yeah, well, you're a racist, although Islam is not a race. And, you know, they're ignoring the fact that, I mean, when we talk about the separation of church and state, we look at religion and politics as two separate realities. But if you look at Islam, Islam is a totalitarian ideology, meaning that politics and ethics and morality and religion are all one unit. So when you talk about law, you're talking about Sharia law. That's not just, law having to do with God's law. It's the law. You know, there is no understanding of the separation of church and state. And so when you're talking about whether Islam is a problem, you have to understand what Islam is. It's not like modern Christianity. It is a religion that is also a political movement, which is how and why. I mean, people talk about decolonization. There's been no religious movement that has been more about colonizing than Islam. It conquered Everywhere that Islam dominates, it conquered those territories. It was not spread through, people going, monks and priests going out and preaching the gospel. It was by the sword. And that's the fundamental understanding. The Eastern Roman Empire used to be based in what we now call Turkey, but it was the Roman Empire back then. And they were pushed out by the Turkish Muslim invaders that came in and knocked down the empire and eventually took Constantinople and, completely changed the entire region. That is what Islam is. And they're not ashamed of it. I'm not saying anything that isn't what, your ordinary Muslim would say. That is what Islam is.
I'm with you, David Strom. I think everything you said there is 100% the truth. By the way, maybe I should have started this, but what are your specific 9/11 memories? Where were you when that happened 25 years ago today?
Well, I'll tell you, I was just at home ready to go to a meeting, and I was turning on the TV, but a lot of things went through my mind at the time. I was about to go in for heart surgery on the 20th of September 2001, and I was scared to death. I mean, I was terrified. Open heart surgery, and I watched this happen in front of my eyes, and I realized how I was so focused on myself, and I'm watching the world change before my eyes, and it actually put it into perspective.
Interesting.
For me. That I should worry less about myself.
That's an interesting perspective that you came away from. Obviously, the surgery was successful. I know you've had health challenges. Great columns this week, though, David. I really appreciated them. I'm glad we got a little bit of a discussion here about Lindsey Clancy. I see a breaking story now that they're digging into the background of the holdout juror, and that people are saying there's an NBC station in Boston saying he's got domestic violence, history. So now they're going after this guy, right? So it's not going to be about Lindsey Clancy. It's going to be about the holdout juror. We'll see how that plays out. David, have a great weekend. I appreciate you coming on this afternoon.
Absolutely.
All right. We got some further 9/11 memories. I mean, there's so many things that I could play, so much audio. I want to share a couple of the memories coming up next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.